Phew. Exited host mode, finally. Oh no, got that volume off. No, thank you. Hello, everyone. Back outdoors. Beautiful day today. Apparently, it snowed here yesterday. Good Lord. Dismal tide. There was a polar vortex. A polar vortex, they say. And ain't it a crazy world we live in? They ought to sell tickets. Anyway, it's much nicer today. Apparently, it's going to rain tomorrow. But then, hopefully, nicer later in the week. Which is good. I'm hoping we have at least one more good month or so to eventually just give up on our plea to stay indoors and say fuck it like everyone else is. Because I've really thought about it, and I don't see any other way this goes. Somebody wanted, I mean, something could change. You know, we could have a huge rupture in the circumstances. But man, the way it's looking now, it really looks like they're just going to say fuck it. And they're not even going to say it, is the thing. They're just going to let it happen. They're going to go, oh, the doors are open. Oh, you guys, oh, geez, these states, they're open now. Oh, well, you know, if you want to, I mean, we're not going to be doing anything. Just so you guys know, there's no point to your quarantine. And that's the real thing that's going to kill it, is eventually people are going to realize that this whole stay indoors for everyone else, you know, London during the Blitz solidarity thing we're doing, clapping and all that, it was all predicated on buying time to have a way to go back to normal that incorporated the risk of the disease in a way to keep it from spreading too far. And that would have required doing something like what South Korea is doing or whatever. And the thing is that we have done nothing. They have done nothing but cover each other's asses. Because it's all a bunch of absolute crooked, incompetent oafs. It's the biggest collection of oafs we've ever had in a government. True clown hours. All of them are just trying to, like, at all those cabinet meetings for Corona, you know what they're actually doing? They're all selling each other multi-level marketing shit. Like, one of them is buying those Mormon yoga pants, and the other one is selling, like, timeshares or something. It's absolute criminality. Everyone's got their hand out. Nobody knows anything. And most of them are genuinely loyal to Trump, at least in the sense that they don't want to piss him off because they know that he could turn on them at any moment. Which means that even though they know he's a moron, when he says things like don't test people early on, they do it because they don't want him to get mad. And now we're in a situation where we just dicked around the whole time. All we did was dick around and then slowly and surely, because everyone is miserable and there was nothing to do, and we don't have any other way of expressing misery in this culture, oh, it became a culture war issue. And now staying in is for libs and cucks, or / responsible reality-based community members, and going outside is for, you know, patriots / chuds. And that's the battle lines now. So, like, today they're opening up some restaurant in Colorado and it's all full and people are mad at those people. But, I mean, yes, they're being very irresponsible. They're being very selfish. But they're also operating in a context where their sacrifice is just not supposed to mean anything, where there is no part of a plan that it plays. It's just delaying the inevitable. So people are just eventually, because they got to go to work or because they just can't stay inside, they're going to make the choice, the selfish individual choice, to come out. And then more are, and more are, and what we're only thing we're going to end up doing to deal with it is normalize dying of corona as a thing that happens now. As a thing that's just one of those things. Just one of those things that happens to you. Like a zombie apocalypse, but like we get the zombies down to a level where, you know, there's like a 5% chance when you go out, that a zombie is going to bite you. Eh. So I think that's going to be it. And the only real question is going to be whether the system can actually absorb all the sick people and whether people, enough of them, make the plunge to get the economy going again. And those are questions I'm not quite sure of. A lot of it has to do with how the virus responds to weather, how it mutates. You know, when it starts hitting populations that are haven't really experienced it yet. I don't really have any kind of plan for it. I don't know. I have no idea. But I would say that it is likely that we do some sort of... We scale up medical facilities in a very fast way. Not as fast as China, of course, but in a fast enough way to facilitate excess capacity from, 9/11 every day worth of people dying from corona, and of course, thousands and thousands more getting sick enough to have to go to the hospital. And so we have more facilities to an extent, so it's not completely, wrenches in the gears and it can't function anymore. But then a lot of triage, and we just actually have fucking death panels. They just full-on Republicans, of course, the guys who called Obamacare death panels, are now going to actually administer legit death panels. Eric Trump is going to be a member of a 3-judge committee with two of his fraternity brothers, who buried a sex worker with in college. They're going to decide whether your grandmother gets a ventilator or not, or whether you get one, actually, depending on how much you contribute to society. And there's going to be all these wonderful metrics we can get from all these tech companies that have been basically hoovering up every piece of data in our lives until now to use to determine who's naughty and who's nice. And then that becomes another way to condition people. Because now, another reason to stay on the beam is to make sure you get access to healthcare, because you could get sick at any minute now. And of course, most of our attention and anger is going to go towards our fellow citizens. Like, when the dam blows and we're in a new normal where just like thousands of dead people is assumed, we're not just going to blow it off. We're not just going to completely normalize it. We're going to have a lot of excess alienation, just horror, that is going to have to be expressed. And it's going to be expressed mostly at who we blame. And that's going to be like the Chinese, a lot of the Democratic governors are going to get a lot of anger from conservatives, and the libs are going to be really, really mad at Trump, of course, and the stupid idiot people who disobeyed orders to stay in and wouldn't wear masks and stuff and don't watch Colbert so they don't know what they're supposed to think about things. And then that's where the energy is going to go, and that's why I think Biden winning could honestly, man, if this depression is as bad as it seems and Biden is in there, like I said, James Buchanan, and I think that becomes more and more true every day, it feels like, because that's going to be a lot of social angst. That's going to be a lot of anger. That's going to be a lot of confusion. That's going to be, honestly, literally just a coarsening of the culture, because we're going to be that much closer to death around us. It's going to be less taboo. We're going to care less. We got a lot of guns, and the idea of this, somnambulant mummy Democrat presiding over, a new normal of just coarsened, economically depressed society. It's not good. It's not fertile ground for, just historically, that hasn't been fertile ground for good stuff to appear. Whereas if Trump's president, and this is going on, it's basically going to be a question of whether he's able to export enough blame to, like, China, which he would require to basically go to war with China to really fulfill the amount of blame they'd have to take for this to avoid him. Or he would actually maybe get a point where he's alienated a significant chunk of people. Not necessarily his base, who love him, but people who don't think politically and now have politics in their face in the form of, becoming a insurfined essential worker or kept in their homes, or have loved ones die or be refused access to health care. There's going to be enough of a trail of bloody fingerprints that him in charge, while this whole thing is, the whole horror of this thing is sinking in, could really create like a positive polarization. But Biden in there is really terrifying. Biden's terrifying. Because I don't know how you get anything other than like some half-assed attempt at like a secession movement, at least, depending once again about how bad the economy gets. I did see, I saw Trump, I saw Alec Baldwin drink the bleach, and man, I said this on Twitter, but when I watch Saturday Night Live, people say, how can you watch it? It's because it's fine, it's fun. You know, I'm going to be doing. I'm going to be on my phone anyway. Why not be on my phone and find out what my friends at SNL are up to? Sometimes I'm surprised by a delightful sketch that I wouldn't have seen otherwise. And then when things are bad, they're usually bad in an interesting or baroque way, and you're like, wow, they really are fucking this up in a very specific fashion. And you can kind of tease it out. It's fun. You can engage with it. Never sad. Never made me sad because it's a 40-year-old show, but also. It was never that good to begin with. It's a lot of it is people suffusing nostalgia for their childhood version of the show. That's why they always are so harsh on the current program. So it's like whatever. But man, these Zoom ones are just soul destroying. Just seeing what like we're willing to put up with already, in terms of just cramming all of our anxiety into the most anodyne, brain-dead packaging to just diffuse all sense of urgency or even understanding of our own life conditions in just like this tesseract of banality. But to do that with everyone in their homes, just drawing attention to how absurd this is, it's like a fucking Ionesco play. And it's very depressing. It's actually sad. As I said, that like the earnest, like kind of like panic behind the eyes of the performers who are recording these in their homes and doing Zoom calls, you can see this glint. And it really does feel like it's videos that a terminally ill person would make for their kids so that they'll remember them by. It's like, hey kids, I'm going to do some funny sketches so you can remember me after I'm gone. You know, that's the kind of vibe, as the kids say, that these things have. And it's brutally depressing. Kyle Mooney's stuff is still decent because he's a video guy originally, but I mean, I'm sure Sandberg also would have done well in this. Pete Davidson reminding everyone that he is one of the most cosmically talentless creeps to ever appear on the show or in popular culture. I mean, I am just baffled. This is also brought on by that mind-blowing trailer for his movie that looks like, no thank you, I would rather watch the Collateral Murder video for 90 minutes than that thing. Holy shit. Wow. And now what he's doing on the Zoom SNLs is he's rapping. He's doing like self-written raps about having to stay home with his mom, and it's like, wow. That's the one where you do feel like things have gotten worse because, you know, there's like, Davidson is the role that has, in previous generations of the show, been filled by Jimmy Fallon, and Adam Sandler. Sort of like the unique figure who has like a talent that's like orthogonal sort of to the SNL, but also intersecting. You know, and usually has a guitar or some sort of musical part of their deal. And so he's like in that tradition. He's a more famous version because he's had famous girlfriends, and he has like, you know, mental health freakouts in public. But he's just like the latest one of those guys. And of those guys, he is the least talented. I mean, at least Fallon, who is, of course, not nearly as talented as Adam Sandler was, at least Fallon has like a geniality. Even if it's grating. Davidson, just, I wouldn't want to sit next to him on a bus, let alone watch him for 90 minutes. Ugh. Ugh, getting creeped up thinking about him. And yeah, like, Fallon also could play guitar. You know, his stuff wasn't as good as Sandler's, because Sandler's was the originator. Oh man, can you imagine when Trey and Matt get a hold of coronavirus? Holy crap. I mean, I can't wait to see. It's going to be funny. Let's see. What's going to happen? Stan's dad is going to get really obsessed with, camming or something. Something about, like, being inside all the time. And then Cartman, of course, is going to be a militant reopen guy. And then that'll be it. It'll be funny. I already wrote it. It's done. Kenny will drink bleach and die. Done. Yeah, there you go. Stan's dad has an OnlyFans, something like that. Zoom messaging, yeah, you get it already. Apparently, that's all that's in production in Hollywood right now is animated shows. So if anybody's got a pitch for a sitcom or something, they're turning it into an animated version of itself. Which means that the whole thing of animated shows becoming just more, you know, like literal-minded therapy sessions for the writers, it's only going to get more explicit. So get ready for that. That'll be fun. That'll be nice. I do like Rick and Morty, though. I'm saying it's a very clever show. You have to be very intelligent to understand the jokes. And I actually like Solar Opposites as well. It's like Diet Rick and Morty. It's like Rick and Morty with half the calories. Yeah, that's the other thing, is that like Pete Davidson, because he is like this, he's basically SNL's version of a SoundCloud rapper. And his whole vibe is that like zanned out, nihilistic, you know, on the edge of mental hysteria at any moment thing. I mean, he got a fucking tattoo of Hillary Clinton, for God's sakes. It makes me feel bad for him, but at the same time, just one of the least appealing people they've ever had on the show. I'm trying to think of who else is on there. Really young Robert Downey Jr. as a kid was really horrible. Obamagate. Guys, it's Obamagate. Man, you guys remember when they were talking about how Obama fucked up the swine flu and how that was way bigger deal than this and how everyone needs to talk more about the swine flu and how that was the real bungle? I don't hear that anymore. They don't talk about that anymore, which really makes you wonder how far those goalposts are going to move. Ooh, is there a possibility of someone like Caesar or Napoleon rising from the military, especially in case they take over? Ooh, boy, that's interesting. That's an interesting question. Because I've thought a lot about this, because I've thought a lot of what the real countervailing forces at play here are, because obviously the working class is largely not a player in any of the scenes. The global peasantry or globalitarian has no real say on anything. In the United States specifically, you've got a political class that is largely incompetent placeholders who are there in the names of corporate interests, some of which are domestic, some international, all of them in some degree of competition and conflict with one another, but with one general, interest. They share a lot of the same interests as the ruling class in Western Europe, and also China and Japan. And they are looking to extract as much money from this thing as possible because they're riding the engine of capitalism as it just drills out the last bits of ore from the center of the earth and turns it into Beanie Babies. So they are riding this thing to the end. That's it. Their main interest is whatever they can take from this. And if the whole thing breaks apart, that's fine, because to not break apart would require undermining the profit engine, which is more important than anything, and that's when you hit the self-destruct button. That's when you get what Marx called in the manifesto the common ruin of the contending classes, which is the end of a unsuccessful class war. But the thing is that the United States also has a state structure. You know, politicians in it don't really have very much power or popular legitimacy, but there are deep state functions that have significant like logistical and infrastructural power. One of the biggest one is the U.S. military. I mean, there is a direct connection between, the impoverishment of the American welfare state relative to Europe and our military budget. I mean, those things are connected. The reason that the Europeans built, public housing and national healthcare services after World War II is that we were the ones who built all the bombs and all the nukes. And protected the free world. They were got off of that because they had to make sure that their working class wasn't swayed by communism, which was right there across the Iron Curtain. We didn't have that, and so instead we were the arsenal. We had military Keynesianism, all stimulus basically through military spending, and that has created the world's largest military infrastructure, the largest military power the world has ever known. And then even if you had like a real breakdown in systems of control and infrastructure and logistics networks, they're pretty durable networks within the U.S. military that are going to be able to withstand that. And they have high esprit de corps, unit cohesion, all that stuff. They have task and purpose, all that. But the thing is, they don't have anything like a united commander. Like there is nobody. Like, because, as I've talked about on this show before, that has been, they all are a bunch of idiots. Like, we've created a perfect mediocrity out of the fake meritocracy we have. Because meritocracy, and Chris Hayes, of all people, has talked about this well, the whole Twilight of the Elites thing, is that over time, meritocracy just reproduces inherited wealth, because the meritocrats who succeed on their own merits then create conditions so that their kids can do as well or better than them, which means that they, because they get all the things, you know, all the edges smooth for them, they do. And but then they don't have the competence that their parents did because they didn't get there themselves, and then they just do it to the next generation who has even less connection to actual competence. And we're like four or five generations deep into that. I mean, the Trump family is a great example. You got the Hartz-Gabel-Gampa, comes from Germany and becomes like he owned a bordello in the Yukon, and then bought real estate in New York, like a real, like an Ayn Rand hero. Then the son takes advantage of, you know, a bunch of government programs to become essentially a middleman between, you know, the New Deal state and the city of New York, just a functionary essentially. And then his son, even less talented, even less involved directly with making the wealth. And that's the exact same thing has happened in the military, because these guys rise. Our military goals have become over the years so confused, listless, contradictory, and it's suffused with failure, because every mission that they've given has been a failure. I mean, what is our record in the 21st century? It's dog shit. And so West Point and the officer corps reproduces just institutional mediocrity. So these guys at the top, I highly doubt that there is a Napoleon amongst them. I highly doubt that. I mean, maybe at the mid-level you'll have some, like, energetic officers, which was the case, you know, with the free officers movements in the Middle East and in Africa. The question is whether they would be able to coordinate and, you know, essentially behead senior authority. But one way or another, when they start just really stripping down the social order of everything to take it private, to create like a network of sort of snow crash libertarian oases, there will be an institutional interest by the U.S. military, separate from capitalism, which it serves broadly, to maintain that system. And that will be the point where maybe all of these, social or political structural things, you know, like Constitution and that shit, that's maybe when they finally get broken. But I don't know. But then, of course, there's always the more likely scenario, it seems to me, given America's size, is more of a spiral outward rather than a concentration inward. But once again, the big inputs that have to be put in here that haven't been put in yet are how bad the virus is, how able are we able to maintain, you know, resilient supply chains? How much are we able to get money into people's hands to restart the economic engine? Those are all questions that have yet to be answered. It is, as Sean Moorhead on Twitter called it, the time in history known generally as the cool zone. When you have a crisis of democratic legitimacy, economic viability, and public health intersecting in a time of rapidly and exponentially increasingly changing climate, that's the cool zone. Only cool things happen in times like that, generally. From the point of view of reading about them, of course. You know, not necessarily living through. But we'll see. But the thing is, like, Napoleon, you know, was able to rise through the military because the revolution happened. You know, there was an actual class-based rebellion against the ancient regime. He didn't act first. He had to be, like, his path to power had to be legitimized by changes in you know, values, one of which replacing blood right with some kind of early version of meritocracy, which is the whole idea of Bonapartism. Bonapartism reproduces the you know, the hierarchical nature of monarchical government, but instead of allowing it to be, you know, inherited by the oldest and, you know, most soft and unaccomplished people on earth, it is a new and vigorous hierarchy where the people have claimed those roles by their intelligence and ability. But of course, you can see even here the way that that never is what works, because Napoleon, the fucking avatar of liberal meritocracy, the guy who basically invented the concept, you know, like the Napoleonic codes and his civic and social reforms were all about abolishing the society of orders and replacing it with a new hierarchy, because it was not non-hierarchical, but a new hierarchy based on talent. This is the ideological underpinning of liberal democratic capitalism. That's what he was. But what did he do in terms of governance? Not only did he make himself emperor, when he conquered other countries, he made his relatives and high marshals their new monarchs, as like a tribute system, seeding a new royalty across Europe that would then be meritocratic. But the goal there, but I believe Napoleon's thought is there. Well, yes. You know, we deserve it, which means if we ever lose it, it'll be our fault. And I think he just didn't realize how fast and how dramatically that impact can be felt when you're living in an interconnected time that moves at such speed as this one, that requires such informational awareness and such speed of action, and such basically the opposite of everything we've allowed to accumulate in our gunked up social and political and economic order. I am wondering what happens if RBG dies by November. I kind of think she might already be dead. I would not be surprised if the old DNC has planned a little weekend at Bader's here, because, you know, it's high-stakes shit. And they know that, I mean, my God, if she dies before November, where is their stick to get anyone to vote for Biden? You know, because presumably that would be, I mean, if he nominated somebody, it would be approved almost immediately, right? Like, unless it was right before the election, she'd be replaced almost instantly. Like, they'd steamroll her. Like, McConnell would pull every lever he has to instantly do that. And then wouldn't that kind of undercut the argument for why you need to vote for Biden? Because, like, even now, Supreme Court, gone. Goof Gator Bader Ginsburg. She is a damn goof. I can't think of a better example of liberal hubris than her conviction that she could hang around, even though she was in her 80s and beset by maladies, during Obama's term, because Democrats were never going to lose the presidency again. What difference did it make? Wow. Wow, lady. Well done. But as I've said, things like the Supreme Court, if we're going to really change anything, if we're really going to, like, not let ourselves get turned into Bezos, you know, bug creatures by the aftermath of this thing, like, just get plugged into an actual matrix of human exploitation, where we are given the bare substance of Soylent and a bare minimum of entertainment vis-a-vis Quibi shown directly on the inside of our eyelids, then it's not going to, because somebody became president and nominated a liberal justice to the Supreme Court, or you won a Supreme Court case. The Supreme Court is going to be quite secondary to any situation like that. But it's not necessarily means it's going to be illegitimate process somehow. It'll just be conditions will not allow, like, for this, the maintenance of the system itself will not allow its constituent parts to maintain their current order. That's a good point about the fundraising. I think the RBG shit is really for the rubes who cut the checks. Man, can you imagine giving money to the Democratic Party? That, oof, the most cucked thing imaginable. Do you think we'll ever pass Medicare for All? See, that's another one like the court thing, where I think we might end up some version of an actual humane healthcare system. I don't think it's going to be because something passes the House and Senate, is ratified by the president, and then passes muster with the Supreme Court. I just don't see that happening. But I also don't see that as a circumstance that's inviolable and will never end. I mean, one thing that might ease it along is the fact that the fucking healthcare industry, COVID thing is fucking with it. I mean, they're not just making money off of this thing. And especially if we've just decided we're going to let people die. That's going to be a huge toll that I don't know if they can deal with at all. Oh, man. And Nancy Pelosi. So I've talked about how they fucked this bat so badly that we're all now in a situation where people have just shrugged their shoulders internally and accepted that they're just going to be okay with a lot of people dying and then end up just, you know, venting all that feeling on each other, you know, in violences and hostilities, small and big. The reason that's happening is because they fucking just dicked around for 8 weeks instead of using the time people stayed home to change anything, like create any kind of system for contact and trace, or maybe create alternative systems for providing food or whatever, suspending the economy, that kind of stuff, suspending rent, doing things like that. And obviously, yeah, Republicans very bad at everything, but like, and I'm not even saying Democrats, because there were Democrats who actually had things that would have made a difference and could have been points of argument and points of differentiation with the Republicans. And Nancy Pelosi intentionally refused to allow any of them to appear in any kind of bill that could be voted on up or down. She essentially refused to put anything out and allowed McConnell in the Senate to write the bills and pass them first, and then she would send the already ratified version to the House. I think her argument probably would be, well, since they're not going to pass anything they don't want to and they have control, then it's wasting time to do anything other than pass what they've already passed, because we're not going to get it through any other way. But, of course, that ignores the fact that there were real differences out there that could have been in some way exemplified, and maybe pressure could have been brought to bear. And there was no pressure for anyone to get their act together, because Nancy Pelosi wasn't applying it on purpose, because she was too blinkered in her understanding of, you know, what the moment called for, to actually grasp what was going on. And like, the reason that if Trump does somehow lose this election, or like loses the support of his diehards, if the massive profundity of this failure that it's jaw dropping. The number of people who he's directly responsible for killing is going to be astronomical by the end of this. He's going to be in George W. Bush territory, maybe. And maybe we will banish him. But do you think Nancy Pelosi, if, you know, she eats enough cord blood and adrenochrome, if she keeps running for that seat, do you think they'll ever turf her out in her wealthy enclave in San Francisco, filled with very, very high information voters? You can't say that they don't know what's going on. You can't say they're brainwashed by Fox News and they're signing off on it. They think it's fine. They think it's cool. Really, really bad stuff. Why pretending that there is something to discuss? Okay, so that's a good question. If you guys know that everything is bullshit and it's all just the oligarchs, then why don't you just talk about that? Well, that's another one of those things where you heighten the degree of abstraction from, like, your grasp to the point that it just creates more anxiety and it freaks you out more. And worst of all, it leaves you really with nothing to say. Because what are you supposed to say? Yes, they're trying to grind us into fucking paste. They're using this. They're using the excuse of this to guarantee that there is no socialist turn in the face of disaster, which there generally has been. Traditionally, the things in history that have led to long-term and significant drops in inequality within cultures are massive wars that destroy capital and lives, significant weather events that lead to things like cereal famine, and pandemics and disease. I mean, the Middle Ages were turned into the modern era essentially by the Black Death. The Black Death is the engine of modernity. That's where it started. That's where the accumulated silt of the post-Roman order was sort of flushed out of the carburetor. And I think our global bourgeois is aware of that phenomenon and is dead set on using the fact that they have accumulated not only more capital than any other ruling class in history, but more powerful capital in the terms of more abstracted and technological capital that multiplies their actual force vastly beyond their number or even their capital, their control of capital. And they're thinking, we're going to be the ones to not do that. We're going to be the first ruling class to survive intact when the system collapses. And of course, even if they fail at maintaining the system, they will still, in some instances, succeed because, you know, the new aristocracy that rose and that rises slowly but surely out of all of these great leveling events, a lot of them have their origins as powerful, influential, successful families before them. So, you know, whatever is built from the ashes of what might fall, there's going to be a heavy sprinkling of accumulated wealth from before that's going to form the toppest layer of sediment. Am I disheveled? Am I tossed? Am I wind tossed? Am I a storm tossed rogue? Am I a storm tossed rogue? Yes. Somebody's asking about like a Cromwell rather than a Napoleon, considering the religion will be more prevalent as a motivator than they was in the last one. That's a good point. I mean, half the guys in charge of the military who are up there are complete millenary nut jobs. I mean, they're all like that dude who got fired for mouthing off about how his god was bigger than, you know, the Muslim god, and he was going to go over there and do crusade against them and shit. But the thing is, that's not all of them. Half of them are like Petraeus and McChrystal, like, kind of like, they're basically like military Joe Scarboroughs. They're like worldly, kind of economically conservative, but mostly chill with social issues. Kind of guys who, can convivially hang out with any group of sophisticated, because they all have graduate degrees, you know. Like they're not peasant levies, you know. A lot of them go to Ivy League schools, you know. So there's actually an internal divide within the leadership of the military that mirrors the educational and religious divide in America. So that's a little bit farther down the path. I don't know, but it's an interesting X factor to think about. What was the name of that guy? What was the name of that crazy general? Boykins. You know what? The thing about how James Comey became director of the FBI is an interesting question, because he is such a naif. I mean, you see what how he talks about himself, and it is like a cartoon Boy Scout, and you think, this has got to be a scam, but then you look at what happened to him and how he perfectly botched everything and got owned out of government and then had to, like, become an inspirational poster slogan writer. That's clearly, he botched something, you know? That was not, that makes you think it was from a real place, that he really does think that way. And so how does somebody like that become in charge of the organization that killed MLK, for God's sakes? And I think it just, I think in situations like that, you just have to assume that there is another guy or woman in the FBI hierarchy who's like the dark version of Comey, who makes the decisions that he doesn't even know have to be made. I don't know who that guy is, but he's definitely in there. If Comey is the guy who appears to be, he is. Just the absolute goof. Am I considered Chinese warlords for America? The warlord period, it's another one that makes sense as a potential historical comparison, just because... Yeah, like the idea of a unified junta coming out of the U.S. military seems less likely than some sort of regional breakdown. I mean, when you consider that, you know, those bases are all spread all over the place. You could have a General Jack D. Ripper situation at any place of a significant size. Guy in charge of Pendleton decides to take over California. He probably could. So whoever's in charge of Camp Pendleton could just become like the Grand Mufti of California tomorrow if he wanted to. Like the Fort Bragg guy could do that to the Carolina coast. And then you've got National Guard, which is the X factor, because those guys have a lot of fucking guns and a lot of shit, and they could be nationalized, obviously, by the president. And are used like for military purposes and overseas, but you know the command authority there is to the states. Ooh boy, it's just a very, once again, I think the people who poo-poo this are right in that a lot of it is just sort of a kind of honestly bad taste wish casting for some kind of, you know, redemption from this arc of just the worst, but you know, us never changing, us allowing things to get worse, but just slowly and slowly worse, and never changing anything, and just imagining someday there's going to be a reckoning somehow. It's all going to crack up and we're going to get to see it. You know, there's a certain degree of that that's part of it. And that's why you've got to remember that this is all dependent on the economy, basically, cratering to a degree that I just don't think is going to happen. I think that there is enough investment at the top level in maintaining, for the near term, some sort of legitimacy in popular government, that they're gonna bail us out, basically, to the extent they have to, and on their own terms, you know. So we're all gonna be super surveilled. We're all gonna have to watch a like 30-second ad before we can piss in our own bathrooms. You know, we're all gonna work in their tubes and shit. We're all gonna eat their whatever paste that they, you know, sell us without asking what it is. And it'll be more of the same, but just more intensified and faster and worse and more brutalizing, because we know the human cost that we're all involved with and are all participating in. And that's the real gross part, is that when people just start staggering back out pretty soon, they're already doing it, and the waves of bodies start piling up and we just normalize it, we're all just going to feel like it's our own fault and we're going to blame each other. The libs are going to blame the conservatives who wanted to own everybody by going out in public. The conservatives will blame the Chinese, so there'll probably be some sort of like a mini pogroms going on at like P.F. Chang's and shit in the suburbs. And it's just because we'll have all this feeling of horror and nowhere to put it, because we just refuse to not internalize at a personal or like social level all misery. I mean, people talk about, you know, in terms of the military, what about private contractors? those guys are big deal. It's going to be significant for us. But, like, right now, I don't think there's a private contractor in the world who could stand toe-to-toe with, like, the military. Maybe I'm wrong about that. There could be some capacities I'm unaware of. I would not be surprised if that was the case. But for the most part, I think those, I mean, those guys who went into Venezuela were fucking, were, you know, defense contractors. They were private military contractors. I keep doing this today. I'm doing the finger quotes. I remember the thing where Chris Farley, he would do them so fast that he flew, but it broke because he was fat. It was a good one. That's what he said. He goes, "I'm fat. I'm sorry, guys." Does everything worse than 25 years ago, does it just feel that way? I think it honestly is, just because we're 25 years closer to, you know, resource capacity hitting environmental feedback and all that. You know, and we have not really made a lot of progress except in a negative way. Becoming more socially atomized, more alienated from each other and from labor, and less, though, conscious of it and able to organize against it, which is what's not supposed to happen in Marxism. That's the one thing that's not supposed to happen, is that increased misery is supposed to directly lead to corresponding working class solidarity and mobilizing. And that doesn't happen because we've been overly symbolized. We got over-symboled. We created a level of abstraction in politics and in culture that and we had a degree of wealth to distribute to kind of buy off working class anger and put all of that, see, because the opening of markets around the world gave like the Western proletariat an offer that the working class wasn't supposed to get in traditional Marxism. I think Marx kind of understood this could happen, but, you know, he didn't see it happen as much. Lenin talked more about it. You can provide some relinquishment of the conditions of pain and suffering by giving more money, giving more recognition to unions and more union control, because you're able to pass off that exploitation to other workers elsewhere, and that doesn't fuck with profit. And as a result of that, those twin motions, the culture becoming abstracted and essentially diffusing Americans' social consciousness. You want to call it spirit, whatever you want to call it, like that sense of emptiness that we all know to be the modern condition. It accelerated with that wealth that we have because of the free real estate, because of the free refills, because of the traditional specific nature of capital accumulation in America, where all internal crises could be resolved through expansion. And now we've reached a point where those inputs are gone. So now, you know, as I've said, the garage is filling with carbon monoxide, but we have not had, but nothing has reversed the social trend. In fact, the social trend has only been vastly exacerbated by technology and by the internet and by the culture that it creates. And now we have it replicated in the physical space by separation through quarantine. It's like every pathology is reinforcing at a different level and then pushing down and reinforcing on one another. But as I said, that pressure is going to create change, and we just have to be ready when change begins, because this is the fluid motion. Right now we are we're at that stage in an earthquake when the friction is so intense that the ground actually liquefies. It becomes essentially a liquid. And that's where we are right now. We're in the liquid state. And that is why, because we don't know the source of our pain and stuff, and because we have so thoroughly had that, you know, pain identified with quenching through consumption, there's going to be a lot of anger as people are not given those things, as their degree of access to material pleasures is reduced, and there's nothing spiritual to fill the vacuum. There's no sense of meaning to fill the vacuum. It's just purely hollowed out. But that's our task, I guess. While whatever we can find, whatever way we can rebuild social ties, I guess, at any level. So, like, if people ask, like, what's the next step of the grill pill after, you know, refocusing on the world around you, I don't know the answer, but the question should be, what can I do to rebuild anything like a social network? A sense of social trust at the people around me. How could I refill that fucking hollowed out chocolate Easter bunny with creamy caramel meaning? And it starts with creating a sense of communal benefit. The idea that you get something by cooperating with your people, other people. That trusting people instead of approaching everyone with the hunched, flinching snarl of the reactionary gun toter actually has a benefit. It makes you more relaxed. It makes you feel like you have people who can help you in a problem. And that only that sense is going to get people able to rise to the challenge. They're going to have to believe in it. And I don't know what that means. I'm sorry, I can't say any more because everything is so wildly fluid. But when the ground starts settling, you got to look around you. We're all going to have to start looking around us. And any greed that we can do that now, we should also do. Oh, God. Love yourself and everyone around you. God damn it. I guess that's it now. Jesus. What a difference a couple of years make, huh? Couple of years, failed presidential race, global fucking pandemic that's going to rearrange the face of civilization and some level, even if nothing changes in the current moment. So yes, love yourself, love everyone around you. Biden dropping out, I think, might very well happen after the nomination. Because I looked it up, and apparently if anybody withdraws after being nominated but before the election, the DNC meets to replace them. The way they replaced Terry Eagleton with Sergeant Shriver in 1972. What that means is, Biden, the day after the hour after the convention nomination, he could say, I'm sick, or I want to spend time with Dr. Joe Biden, and then they can put in anyone they want. They don't have to do any redo of any, votes from the convention delegates. It's just DNC members or some grouping within there. So, yeah, I think that's a very realistic way that could happen, especially since, as I've said, it doesn't really matter what Biden wants here because he has no independent base of support in the party. He's borrowing Obama's because Obama couldn't be on the ballot. And that means that if Obama makes the same recognition of reality that he made before Super Tuesday, which was, if I don't get off my butt, we're going to fucking eat shit in something that we could win. Like I've said, if Trump looked unbeatable, if we were still sitting at 1.5% unemployment and the media was all culture war horseshit, and then the DNC just blew themselves up to nominate Biden, I could see them saying, fuck it, let him take the fall so we're all hands clean and win the next one. Let him fundraise off Trump for 4 more years. But they really see that they could get it this time. But it's not going to be with Biden. But they can't do it now because it's too... it's still in the air, which the problem is, it's a long ass time till what, August? That's a long time. That's a whole summer that they got to keep him they don't have to take him out much, but they have to keep him in people's public eye. He has to be an actual, you know, alternative to Trump for people, even if they hate Trump, to want to go out and vote for him. The most boring ending to the virus, yes, but also, honestly, I think in the medium term, the most destabilizing, because the most boring conclusion is high six figures, maybe millions dead, and that being normalized. And I don't think you can just metabolize that without any ill effect. I think it will have significant social pressure, especially as the recovery to this economic collapse that's still in the process will make 2008's recovery look like, you know, the recovery after Black Friday or Black Monday or something. And in a situation like that, all that death is going to have an effect. Even if in the short term, it's just, oh, yep, more of the same, but worse. Unless, of course, not as many people die as we're all thinking, but considering how many are already dead, I don't think that's realistic. I mean, we're almost to six figures already. I don't think there's a way we're not talking about nearly a million. So we're going to have to really like look at each other and say what we're capable of allowing, and it's not going to be pretty. Whoever they replace Biden with is another question, though, because that's a person that has to have juice in the party, because you can't just put in anybody there unless they have no independent power base and they're no threat. So like a total empty suit that you'd have to have total trust wouldn't be able to actually exercise power. I don't know who that would be. Maybe Cory Booker, but not famous enough. They've got to have Mondo name recognition. And that is why the people who say Hillary Clinton, hilariously, are... You know, that's the funny answer. That is kind of, isn't that honestly the funniest thing that could happen? And so I honestly, because who else is as famous? They're trying to build up Cuomo, but honestly, man, I don't know how you pull that one when it's the epicenter of not only infections, but deaths, basically in the world. Newsom, I don't know if he's going to be able to get famous enough in the next few months, especially since there really is an East Coast bias in media, and being in California doesn't give him the attention that being on East Coast time does, which is what gave Cuomo that pump in the first place, even though he's been one of the most incompetent idiots to even come close to this fucking thing. One of the worst guys, and he's in the high 80s. Maybe they will just do it. Maybe they'll overlook it. Maybe the fact that he killed all those people isn't going to matter, because... To the same way that the MAGA people will just say, well, no, that's because of China or because of the governors or because of Peter Strozik and the lovely, lovely Nelly Orr. And liberals will say it's because of Trump. They'll say, yeah, oh, yeah, but he couldn't have done anything differently. Could happen. But even then, I wonder about Cuomo. He does seem like a Clinton. He's in the Clinton orbit, right? So... He's a little St. James Democrat, as they call him. I hope if there is a historical record of this period of American history that, you know how there are different factions of different political parties in history. There were the Bourbon Democrats, who were sort of the reactionary Southerners who had to be Democrats because, you know, there was only one party there. They could be little St. James Democrats. Bernie was defeated in 2016 by a coalition of little St. James Democrats. So if Cuomo is in there, then that's probably another victory for the little St. Jamesocrats. I mean, working councils, I hope so. I hope we can get people to work at the level of their job. Problem is, I mean, the thing to remember is that even in the Great Depression, there was still massive amounts of labor militancy, even with so many people out of work. So, you know, the traditions have been lost in a lot of ways, but, you know, the dynamic isn't inherently doomed. there are strategic places where labor militancy could, you know, reassert working class prerogatives and realign politics. Because, I mean, if things get bad enough, I could honestly see this whole culture war thing really it could either explode or the bubble could burst. If things get bad enough and people get it at a workplace level, it could. But we got to be in the position to make it happen if those conditions arise. It's just, I like coming on and talking to you guys, but one thing that just really, bums me out is that, like, I always end up feeling like we're just have to come back to just how unstable it everything is and how hard it is to know what's going on. And I know that that just feels so unsatisfying to sit with, but I think we all have to sit with it. The way we're sitting with anything else, we have to just sit with our with things moving in slow motion, you can kind of see where you are in relation to things closer. So I guess you just got to keep your eyes peeled. Pay attention to stuff. Not arguments on Twitter, hopefully, but, you know, situations as they develop. I don't know. We're all just throwing spaghetti at the wall here. Just trying to see what sticks. Just trying to vibe our way through our lives on this crazy spinning blue ball. Somebody wants me to tell them how to help murder and threaten oligarchs. No thank you, officer. I'm not going to be discussing that today. I'm simply doing my Twitch stream. I'd be appreciate it if you please be on your way, unless you have a warrant or something. Felix's idea of the prisoners as the Bonapartes. Well, of course, they have to be from Illinois. Our provincial boy will simply not allow the next great dynasty not to arise from that ridiculous shard of flatland. I mean, we'll see how JP isn't really asserting himself. I mean, people say he's doing okay, but I'm not hearing a lot about him. So, you know, get your shit together. What is my take on the Flynn charges being dropped? I mean, it's probably because they pulled strings, because they've been pulling the fuck out of a bunch of strings. But also because a lot of this whole thing was bullshit. I mean, come on, man. We all know at some level that, like, a lot of the Russiagate stuff was just made up. Or, like, a game of telephone. Because the whole thing was hinged on something that was never proven in any way. That there was a direct connection between Trump at the level of the candidate and Russia in any meaningful way. But also, yeah, of course they put their finger on the scale. I just hope we stop talking about all that shit forever. I really do. I really hope we can just internalize what a failure that was. I hope some of the people who, like, spent any time on it can maybe think for a minute of how wasted that time was. Everyone who is proud of the fact that they know Lev Parnas. Everyone who yelled at Virgil about how he was too disrespectful to the idea of Lev Parnas. I want them to be right now. I want to find out every one of them, and I want to ask them, do you know who Lev Parnas is? And see how many of them still remember. They're probably all cheat by Googling, but I bet a lot of them, if you said, who's Lev Parnas to them now? They wouldn't know the fuck you're talking about. And that was like 4 months ago. Lev Parnas dies of coronavirus. No one's going to know who that was, including the libs. Ugh. How have you avoided being misanthropic and cynical? I think the best way to avoid misanthropy is to remember, as I've said, that everyone is where they are for reasons outside of their control. They have choice, you know, and they chose to do the things they did, but the options they were presented were not theirs. And so that's just to, like, drain my feelings about them with venom. But if they're doing bad and they're evil, they should be opposed. But because their condition is provisional, that means everyone's is, which means people can be better. I really think that. And I think that proof is in the pudding in terms of human history. You know? We would have destroyed ourselves already. You know, think of those Russian, think of like the three different Russian military officers who could have ended all life on Earth during the Cold War and chose not to. Not even knowing, really, that they weren't dooming their own country to nuclear oblivion. The guy who didn't fire on the blockade ships in the Cuban Missile Crisis. And of course the guy who didn't sign off on a nuclear strike when the blips came over the radar. He guessed, no, that's probably not there. And even though everything told him he should, he didn't. And those systems were all designed to be fail-safe. They assumed that given these conditions, the person will do X. And they were designed that way. And yet, when that moment came, these guys said no. And that means that at some level, I think we can all say no. And the task before everybody right now is to figure out where they can start. All right, guys, that was a good time, I thought. Had fun. Sorry if I was spacey. I haven't eaten yet. Got to eat a little bit. But I have dinner. I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Bye-bye.